Hello, everyone.
Hey, guys.
Welcome back.
Welcome to episode 11 of B-I-J-T-G.
You're probably wondering why we aren't yelling out certain words. Well, there's a fun fact for that. Today's episode, dun-dun-da-da, will be featured in certain elementary schools.
So we can't be explicit this time.
I know. It's going to be pretty clean.
But no worry. We're still got the juice.
Yeah. Well, I'm Maya.
I'm Samnika.
And let's get into our episode entitled
Say It Loud. I'm black and I'm proud.
We're celebrating black people in STEMs and other things, y'all.
So last episode, we talked about grad school interview process and making sure that whatever program you choose, you know that you'll be able to thrive. So this means choosing a program that the advisor or the program won't shame you for being black and will not try to profit off your blackness. We don't need these colonizers bringing us in to appropriate our culture and ideas.
I mean, just that simple. It's like you come in, you're already a dope scientist.
Mm-hmm.
Do dope scientist things.
Wakanda forever.
Wakanda forever. And, you know, as a graduate student, you are a role model to those that are younger than you, whether you want to be or not. And with great power comes great responsibility.
Spider-Man reference. We love Superman. Marvel!
In that context, as minoritized people, we got to take care of ourselves and our history. So today we're going to celebrate being black.
Mm-hmm.
And us, in particular, being in STEMs. But we also want you, who are not in STEMs but still enjoy this podcast, to celebrate being black and doing whatever it is that you do, whether it be education, psychology, sociology. We want you to just sit back, relax, look at what we're going to talk about today, and put it in context of what you do.
Like I tell my fifth grade girls that I mentor, every morning stand in the mirror and just say you love you to yourself. Love your black skin, love your black hair, love your lips, your nose, all of that. And just love being you.
Amen. All right. So today is a little different. I did just a big, huge text bubble out into the universe of teachers in my phone. And these teachers range from pre-K teachers all the way up to teachers in colleges and universities. And I asked them just to ask their students, what are some questions that they've always wanted to ask black folks and, you know, black people in STEMs, if they're interested in STEMs, or just black people in general.
Just adults.
Yeah. Just what's something you always want to ask a black adult besides their mom and their daddy? And we got some pretty good questions. So the first one comes from a preschooler.
Hi. I love preschoolers.
So their question was, did you visit a lot of black history museums or historical landmarks as a child, and do you still?
So when I was in Detroit, because I'm from Detroit, so I went to all the black schools, like all the black history museums, the art museums. We had like a black art museum. The elementary school I went to was Mary McLeod-Bethune Academy, and they were definitely a proponent of us. We black, we proud, we're going to do all the black stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't remember exactly the names of the museums and things like that, but it was like the African American History Museum.
Mm-hmm.
It was like black arts. We went to just science museums in general, but in downtown Detroit, there were a lot of just black Pacific museums.
Mm-hmm.
And then even as I grew up, when I was in Chicago, there were several black history, like exhibits. So sometimes the museum might not just be a black history museum, but a lot of times they have exhibits that are dedicated to black history.
Okay, cool. So my house wasn't that far from Atlanta, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And growing up, we were just surrounded by black history. We knew every way to get you to the King Center, I guess, before we were like 10.
Mm-hmm.
I remember going into the King Center as a kid, and you would see the different types of exhibits and stuff like that. The one that really struck me was the one on lynching, because I saw it at such a young age, and it was a good thing to see, but it was also traumatizing to see.
Right.
But another jewel was the Apex Museum that they have in Atlanta. I loved it. Like, it was full of everything black. like, it was all black everything. It really was. It's just scientists, experiments that they could have, black history tours, the day in the life of a person. And now recently, I haven't been there, but they did, and they probably still do, have a nice exhibit on black women in STEMs.
Cool.
Yeah.
Do and we need to, like, go?
Yeah. Yeah. And, Road I mean, trip. Very, very, very well put together, highly celebrated, highly melanated. Like, it's just really nice. And as far as landmarks, Dr. Martin Luther King's church, Dr. Martin Luther King's house, Hosea Williams Foundation, a lot of, my dad knew a lot of the people that worked with Hosea Williams. So he used to tell us just all the stories that were pertaining to that. And then almost most of the streets in downtown Atlanta are not just named after slave owners. They were named after prolific black politics and activists. So, yeah, we got the best of both, too. Okay. This is another question from a preschooler. And it was, did you ever want to invent something?
So I've been looking at these questions for the last hour or so, and I can't remember if I ever really wanted to invent something. Not really. I mean, I'm pretty sure I had really creative ideas when I was younger. And I might have invented something that already was invented. And I know I was really just curious, that I was always just messing with stuff. Like, I loved technology even when I was younger. As far as just, I never really saw, like, oh, there's a need and maybe we need to do this. I might have invented some type of sandwich that was really cool. Like, just delicious. But what about you?
I think when I was younger, so growing up down south, we did know about, oh my God, it's so funny. Okay, so we did know about, you know, a lot of black inventors from when we were in elementary school.
Like George Washington Carver.
We knew George Washington Carver, Garrett Morgan, Elijah McCoy, all that kind of stuff from when we were younger. And the thing was, when I wanted to, what I wanted to invent was like a new type of super soaker. But I didn't know that the super soaker, for one, was invented by a black man who went to Tuskegee University.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, I was like, I wanted mine to be pink and it would have three holes. So it just wouldn't shoot in one direction. It would shoot in like three different directions. So if you're playing like super soaker tag, you can get like everybody. So
I think they have someone, you know, someone must have.
Yeah, yeah, they already have that. But, I mean, I was like, I don't know, eight. I said I wanted to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, a question. Did you have any black teachers in middle school or high school that inspired you? Did you?
Oh, yeah. I've had a couple. So, again, I was pretty much raised in a predominant black community, so every teacher I've ever had has been black.
Up and until college. Oh, no, because you went to HBCU, so you still have black teachers. Okay.
So, I mean, at the elementary school level, Miss Britton definitely paved the way for me to just see women of color educating the masses. And then on top of that, she had everybody, like, so in check that, like, I don't think we'd want to mess up.
Right. You don't want to disappoint them. Yeah. Disappoint her.
Like, she gave that energy of, like, I got to do better when I'm in there. And then in middle school, I had Miss Tammy Grimes, who was my Georgia history teacher. And I hated that Georgia history class so bad because I felt like it was the worst class they ever had, because it was like, it taught you the history of Georgia, but it skimmed over black history, it skimmed over the Native American history, and it just literally talked about the colonial era of Georgia, the Gone with the Wind crap, Civil War, and then, oh, we're gonna switch to today, and all these presidents that don't really do anything.
Right.
And in high school, I had Mr. King, who was my English teacher, and he helped me to actually appreciate writing and literature, which, if I wasn't a scientist, I would probably be a librarian or an English teacher. And I don't know, he just made stuff cool. And then there was Miss Dale, who was my human anatomy teacher, and I remember she let me dissect a cat. and it not be like a serial killer creepy type. So that was cool.
So I can't remember my first grade, the name of my first grade teacher, but I remember that she had went to Africa a couple of times and she knew Swahili, so she taught us Swahili. So that was really cool. And then in middle school, I had Miss Taylor. So she was my 7th and 8th grade science teacher. So she always pushed us to do more. She was like above over a whole bunch of organizations. Like we had academic games. We had DAPSAT. So academic games was kind of like math and linguistics, like English and spelling words. Mm-hmm. DAPSAT was like engineering. So we went to this college and we built robots. Like,
oh, nice.
Yeah, so like just mini robots to use. And then she always made sure everyone had, as part of her class, you had to do science fair projects. So there was like mm-hmm. the school-wide science fair project, and then the winners of those went to get to go to the citywide science fair. So actually in 7th grade, I won first place gold. So then I got to go to Canada, Toronto, to their science museum. That was one of my prizes for going
nice.
There, which was awesome. Had Mr. Hendricks. He was a history teacher. He was really awesome the way he taught history. And then in high school, Miss Lawrence, who was my math teacher, so she also did academic games. And she was really cool because not only did she make sure you did what you have to do for academic games, but she was just someone that I could just like hang out in her classroom and talk to her and stuff like that. So it's always nice to have teachers that inspire you. And when you have a teacher that is that actually believes in you, which is really cool. You definitely should. You know, this is for our young audience members that might be listening to this. Definitely listen to them and just, like, try to, like, soak in some of their knowledge. Because, mm-hmm. yeah, they're older and they're adults and they're, like, centuries old. But they have some good knowledge that you're going to remember them when you become an adult.
And teachers, like, sometimes it's cool if you don't go by the book.
Definitely.
The reason why these teachers probably stood out to us is because they didn't follow all of those lesson plans y'all have to make. I'm so sorry.
Mm-hmm. My history teachers, we learned about slavery and lynching and, you know, the boat ride and all that stuff. We watched Roots. I don't know if in school they watched Roots no more.
Oh, yeah, we watched it too.
So the next question is, was there anything in Black history that made you, that made us want to be a Black scientist?
Ooh.
So what made you want to become a scientist?
I remember being in school and they had the like cards, like the African American history, Black history trading cards. They were really cute. And each one had like a fact and they were all changed. You know, they were styled differently for like inventors, mm-hmm. business moguls, millionaires, so on and so forth. And politicians, yeah. So I remember having the inventors and I just remember like, going through there, and I realized there weren't a lot of Black women inventors. And I was tiny, so, you know, in your mind, at that age, I'm thinking, I'm going to be a doctor, an astronaut, or a lawyer, because those are our big three, you know, those are our big three in our community. But I just remember saying, I think I could be a scientist. Like, I want to be on a card.
Like, and if it's in none of them, they need me, right? So if I become a scientist, they're going to automatically put me on a card, right?
I know, right? The way our minds work, you know, so I don't know. I thought, you know, a lot of the inventions that were so innovative and created by Black men and women were not still getting their light or their due diligence.
Right.
And I just wanted to be able to contribute whatever knowledge I had to bettering my community. And that's how I pretty much see myself now.
Yeah, so I mean, I mainly wanted to, always wanted to be a doctor when I grew up, so like a medical doctor. I wanted to be an OBGYN. I wanted to deliver babies. So up until I got to college, and it actually wasn't until I took an ecology course that I decided, oh, you know what, actually I want to be a scientist. But it's really interesting because all the stuff that I did with like science fairs and DAPSAT and academic games, all that was preparing me to be a scientist. But just in my head, I was like, no, I'm going to be a doctor. So it wasn't really, even though I saw all these amazing Black inventors and scientists and people, I still was like, it was like drilled in my head. My mom was a nurse. I want to be in the medical profession. I want mm-hmm. to be after, like, go after what my mom is doing.
I mean, to add to that, too, when I was at Tuskegee, because, you know, when you're a kid, you look at it from one perspective. I want to be on a card.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you look at it as an adult, when I was an undergraduate at Tuskegee, I worked in Meal Bank Hall, which is probably not open anymore. Mm-hmm. We worked in the laboratory in which George Washington Carver worked in when mm-hmm. he was there.
Ooh.
I remember just going like on our lunch breaks in lab to the George Washington Carver Museum, mm-hmm. and it would just have all the stuff that he did, like how he was painting with like peanuts and
with
like
peanut paint.
Yeah, like it was just crazy. Like you saw all these innovations and things in which he brought into the world, and I don't care what nobody say. I feel like the man invented peanut butter. Y'all better give him his credit. And I just remember being like, I really love agriculture. I love environmental science, and I definitely want to use that to contribute to making sure that Black people can thrive in an environment that is pretty much given to us dirty and unhealthy.
Right. So with that being said, I know that sometimes it's hard to like imagine ourselves as in careers where we're not traditionally portrayed. So if you see on TV, when you see a scientist, all you see is, you know, white men or white women, and you're like, well, then I can't, then you might be thinking you can't do it because there isn't anyone that looks like you. Though we're really trying hard to like prevent people from doing that. There was just a Twitter picture from this international organization that they posted something about scientists, and they're like, science has no gender. But the five images that they posted of cartoons were just a white woman.
Yep.
And there's a lot of black backlash to people about that. But like, maybe y'all should have thought this through, because scientists are not just white women. We have black women, we have indigenous women, we have Latinx women. Mm-hmm. So just because you don't see that. So one thing I will ask everyone to do to try to change a little bit is, so me, I didn't realize that not everyone shares this perspective. But when I'm reading a book and I'm reading about a character, I automatically think that that character is black. Most people don't do that. The default is white. But, like, just try to change your default. So when you're thinking about a character, if you're reading about Sally in this book, imagine Sally being black. Imagine Sally looking just like you.
Yep.
Even if the book says she's blonde with blue eyes. Nope. To me, Sally is black.
Yep. And there's blonde and blue-eyed black people out there.
That's true.
So the next question that we have is, when were you guys exposed to Black history? More so, at what age did it actually stick?
Oh, that was preschool. Like, I went to Mary McLeod Bethune Elementary School.
Yeah.
Every day was Black history. We did not just celebrate Black history in February. Like, our halls was painted with Black history. Mm-hmm. Halloween, the only people we could dress up as was people from Black history. Like, we couldn't dress up as ghosts or witches or anything. No, we dressed up. I remember one year I dressed up as Rosa Parks. My brother dressed up as Martin Luther King. Like, we came in suit and ties and, like, clothes like that.
I'm just shocked that you celebrated Halloween. We had Hallelujah-ween or Hallelujah night or whatever it was called.
Well, I mean, that was like, yeah, in the school, it wasn't like, it's Halloween. It's like, no, okay, you can dress up, but you're dressing up as.
Well, I guess in my house, we were always exposed to it because everybody in my house is storytellers. My grandmother was a storyteller. My mother and my father, they're both storytellers. And they love to tell stuff from the perspective of their generation.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we was knowing about the injustice that my grandmother and my grandfather were going through. And at the same time, I was learning about stuff that my dad and my mom was going through.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was fun to hear. It was sad, but it was fun to hear, you know, differences in the generations. Like, I remember my grandmother telling us about how she was doing her laundry at a local laundromat, and she had to basically take all the sheets, throw them in the back of the car, grab all the kids, put them in the car because the Klan was coming.
Mm.
So she had to get out.
Right.
I remember my dad telling me about him going to Woodstock. That I will never share that story. I remember my mom telling me about what her, since she's of fairer skin, she was telling me the complexities and how she felt when she was seen as passing.
Mm-hmm.
She hated it, you know. So, like, I've basically, you know, I've learned about this stuff all my life. And then added the King Center, Apex Museum, the Art Museum in Atlanta and everything. I was getting cultured at a very young age.
Yeah, I mainly learned everything through school. My dad was like 40-something when I was born. So he actually grew up in Mississippi in the 40s. Ooh. And I know he had stories, but he didn't tell none of those stories. I just know he moved up to Detroit, to Michigan, and when he was 18. And most of his family moved up, like all the boys moved out from Mississippi. The girls stayed there, but...
Say no more.
Yeah.
We knew what it was.
Definitely. So I think our next question is, who is your favorite black female scientist or inventor?
You go first.
All right. So I kind of want to make a point here. So both me and Maya are scientists. My favorite scientist is myself. But if my second favorite scientist is Maya, but aww, if I had to choose somebody, I'm going to choose Mae Jemison.
Yay.
So she was born in Decatur, Alabama. She graduated from Stanford, and she went to Stanford when she was 16 years old. So she graduated from Stanford with a bachelor's degree in chemical engineering and a bachelor's degree in Afro-American studies.
All right.
Then she went to Cornell Medical School and got her MD. She worked with the Peace Corps and the CDC, so that's the Center for Disease Control. And this was all before she applied to NASA, where when she was accepted and went through all her training, she went into space and conducted experiments in space because she is a scientist.
Hello.
And then after that, she came back and she was a professor at both Cornell and Dartmouth College, which are some really prestigious schools.
Hello.
So, yeah, she would definitely be my favorite. Yeah. Second, coming up second is Katherine Johnson.
Yeah,
if you haven't watched Hidden Figures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm going to apply for NASA one day. I don't know if
I think they need to... are they still accepting astronauts yet?
I'll just be that person. Like, hey, that weather look real good. Where you at? So my favorite black female scientist or inventor is Dr. Georgia N. Dunstan. She got her Bachelor's of Science in Biology at Norfolk State University and at HBCU. Her Master's degree in Biology at Tuskegee University.
Of course.
At HBCU, my alma mater. And her PhD in human genetics at the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor. She is a professor of human immunogenetics at Howard University.
HBCU.
Hello. And she is the founding director of the National Human Genome Center at Howard University.
Awesome.
I mean, I have no experience or anything when dealing with human genome. But I enjoy reading her papers. I mean, she has papers in Nature, and she's been cited like thousands of times. And I mean, like, to me,
she's awesome. Black girl magic.
She's black girl magic. She's the mecca of, like, when I see a black scientist, modern black scientist, and, you know, we living in a society where you're technically not anyone if you don't have a high H index or I whatever index or a G index or A, B, C, D, E, F, G index. Like, if your citations are low. I mean, like, all these factors. And she's just sitting here minding her own business.
Doing her thing.
Directing her Human Genome Center and just putting out publications. And that's it. That's goals for me. You know?
I love it. All right, so we're going to take a quick break so you can listen to our sponsor, Anchor. And then when we come back, we'll get into some more questions from the older generation of our students.
Hey.
About being black and proud. Whoop, whoop. Say it loud. I'm black and I'm proud. Welcome back. We're back from our ad and a short little break where we cooled down because we're in this hot room, 2x2x10.
Oh, my God.
So we're going to answer a few more questions that we have. Most of the next ones are from high schoolers and maybe some undergraduates.
Mm-hmm.
So the first question is, what do we plan to do with our degrees and how do we plan to impact the next generation of black scientists?
Whew. Well, I'm going to let you go first because yours is like
dead set.
Cool.
So I, Sam Nika, I will have my doctorate, so I'll be Dr.
Halsey, honey.
I'll be Dr. Halsey in 3 months. I plan to be a professor at a university to teach and do research. and eventually becoming chair of my department and dean of my college. And that is exactly how I plan to impact the next generation, because I am going to be a Black professor in the classroom where I am not going to ignore my Black students. They're going to see someone who looks like me and they're going to think, oh, I can do this because she's doing it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to make sure that they get all that, they get the attention that they need. So I'm not going to just stereotype them, be like, oh, they're not interested in any ecology, or because people never, I don't see many students in ecology, so no, they wouldn't like this. I'm going to treat everyone equally and be like, stand in front of the classroom, be like, hey, I have this position available. Does anybody want to do it? Instead of choosing those who I think might enjoy it. And I'm going to look at people holistically. So I'm not just going to look at their grades. I'm going to look at what they overcame to get to where they are. Because someone who has had a upper middle class background and have all A's and have had tutors and got 1600 or whatever, 2400 on their SAT, of course they're going to get that because they have the resource to do it. Right. But if you have someone that came from a Detroit public school, they got a 3.5, they got 24 on the ACT, they, you know, first generation, and they still managed to get to college,
I want them.
Yeah, they worked way harder to get to where they are than someone where it was given to them. So I'm going to make sure that everyone is included and is able to get to the same level regardless of race, gender, socioeconomic status.
All right.
And now I'm going to step off of my platform.
Cool. So I, too, am all about the people, like Sam.
For the culture. Past, present, and future.
However, as of right now, my pathway to getting people into these spaces is different. I pretty much am sure I'm going into government or industry, which is great because there are already a lot of brown faces in government and industry. Especially,
and I'm going to need to hook up for those grants.
Gotcha, sis. Especially dealing with agriculture, environmental science, and public health. There are a lot more Black people in those sciences than in any other science, really, with the exception of, like, engineering. There are a lot of Black engineers, and I am so happy for that. My thing is, I want to be able to, for a couple of years, work, build connections, be able to mentor people, as I am being mentored, into positions of power in these industry and government positions, and then be able to transfer all of the knowledge I get and all of the connections I have just created from working in these areas to working at a, most likely HBCU, I ain't even gonna play. trying to find a nice way to say that, but no, I'm probably gonna go back to HBCU because it's just the energy. It's just something different. And I love the fact that Sam wants to put brown faces in PWIs. I have no problem if I have students and they want to get degrees at PWIs, sending them to you, like, at all. But I just kind of feel like I want all my students to be in a safe environment, and I want to be able to bring more connections to those HBCUs from my past experience at hopefully working in industry or in government, and then being able to connect those students to positions in which they choose. Not all the students will probably want to go into graduate school. Some of them might just be getting their degree because they're like, I really want to get my degree and just go work. I respect all those hustles. And I just want to be able to bring different aspects to people who need them. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, still live. Like, I want to help build a community, but I also want to kind of sit back and thrive and be happy that I have made it when I wasn't supposed to. Right. You know, actually helping other people make it, and then just kind of watch them flourish.
Awesome. I feel that.
Our next question is, how do you feel about diversity, fellowships, and scholarships? Do they cheapen your education?
They do not cheapen your education at all. The purpose of these scholarships and fellowships is to help us get things that we otherwise wouldn't have gotten. And believe me when I tell you, even if you don't have a diversity fellowship or a diversity scholarship, people are still going to think that you have one.
Yes.
And that's the only reason you're going to get there. So you might as well take that money anyway.
Yep.
So I used to be against diversity fellowships because I was like, I want to get through on my own. I don't want someone thinking that I got somewhere just because it was I was a diversity hire or diversity grad student or not. And then as I went through life in undergrad, and it was a little bit of a struggle too, because I also was having to work full time to get it. So I'm like, okay, I'm working full time. I'm putting myself through school. No one can say that I got my bachelor's degree because I got a diversity scholarship. Guess what? People still got thought. I got a diversity scholarship or a fellowship. People still make that assumption. So you know what? I could have just, you know, focused on my school, got better grades, didn't have to work as a nurse assistant, and still got to the same point that I'm at and just had this extra fellowship or scholarship. But because I refused to apply for these scholarships, I just kind of I didn't really mess myself up, but I kind of made it harder for myself because I had that thought process that these are not good things. But now I'm coming to an understanding that they're not even putting us up for these other fellowships. Nope. Like, I apply for stuff. And so, like, me coming for my PhD, I had a diversity fellowship. They didn't even put me up for the regular fellowship. So if there wasn't a diversity fellowship, I never would have gotten the regular fellowship because they wouldn't have put me up or they wouldn't have even chosen me. As I'm applying for jobs right now, I've talked to people and they said that the only way they've gotten a job is through a diversity hire. They apply for jobs through the regular avenue and the diversity avenue, and people never chose them through the regular avenue. And it's because people automatically assume that our research and that our value is less. So unless we force these white people to hire us, they're not going to hire us. There have been diversity initiatives since 1970, yet the percentage of faculty and in academia has not changed.
And that's not because even getting to,
they don't want us.
Yeah, that's not even getting to the promotions as far as with tenure. Like, most black professors are usually at the adjunct or assistant. They never truly make it to full professorship.
Right. Because even if they do bring you in and you're on that 6-year probation period, they're going to try their hardest to figure out something that
will not let you,
that they don't want to get with your tenure. So not only, we always have to work twice as hard. Why make ourselves work harder just because we have this, you know, diversity thing? And I mean, I sometimes wonder, I have several ones now on my CV, and people probably look at it like, oh, well, she has all these fellowships, but they're diversity fellowships, so they don't count. There's still money. Green is still green. My bills still got paid. My papers are still papers. Why make it harder for myself because I would have been TAing or something while I'm trying? Like, I wouldn't be graduating this semester. I would probably still be here for another year or two because I would have had to teach and couldn't focus as much on my research. So these fellowships and scholarships, they help you put more effort into you getting A's, because a diversity fellowship and scholarship, it doesn't give you an A in the class. It just pays for your tuition.
Yeah.
It just pays your bills. Pay, put a roof over your head.
That's it.
So if anytime someone says, oh, well, you just got a diversity fellowship, I was like, I'd be like, yeah, that diversity fellowship paid my bills. It didn't publish my papers. It didn't give me an A in my classes. Look at my transcripts. Like, I still got merit.
Yep. I mean, look, if I had a t-shirt, it'd say, money is money, and
I
had my...
That's
where we at. I mean, I agree with everything Sam just said. There you go.
Yes, definitely. So, how do you... Do you suffer from anxiety in grad school, and how do you cope?
Ooh, that's a good one. I have bouts of anxiety, usually around times when I have to give major presentations. Not all the time. Usually you go in there with an air of, like, I got it. But, like, around, like, qualifying exam, preliminary exams, probably around the final defense, I usually do have bouts of anxiety. Also, publications.
Yeah. Oh, congratulations, by the way.
Hey.
Basically accepted some revisions, but you got this.
Thank you. I feel that waiting period between, like, when you submit a paper
and then you're waiting for
the response is the worst period for me, because I will check that computer every day until I see something, which I basically did. And
that's how you knew you got that email 2 minutes after they sent it.
You already know. I woke up that morning. The first thing I did was look like, y'all got it. So the way I cope is I do fun things. So you go through, you have good breathing exercises, you meditate, your woosahs and everything, you do your presentation. Usually after you do the presentation, you realize, like, oh, it wasn't that bad. You know, you always have those nerves and anxieties. Or even when you get your paper and you want to make revisions on it, or or it might come back as not a good fit. I hate that word. Mm-hmm. It might not be good for that paper. It's okay. Like, you kind of got to take it with a grain of salt and you move on. Like, I'm learning that to not take failure hard.
Right.
Like, take it as a learning experience, woosaw it, and then do better. That's how I'm learning how to deal with some of my anxiety. And to deal with others is just to celebrate every single thing you do.
Yep, accomplishments.
Every accomplishment you make. The fact that you wrote probably a paragraph of what you were supposed to be doing.
Yep.
It's good.
We celebrated when you submitted that paper, and we about to celebrate it now that it came back.
Get the
and
we
gonna celebrate it when she submitted again.
Get the champagne
and then when it get accepted. And then when it get she get her proofs.
Mm.
And then when it actually comes out in publications. Mm. Like this one paper, we gonna celebrate every each one of the six steps it's gonna take.
I love how you just so hype.
You the one that's giving me the beat. Dancing in the studio. So as far as me, my anxiety usually comes back when I get comments. So if I do submit a paper and I get reviewer comments, I'll see that email. I start to panic. Even if it's like accepted with minor revisions or major revisions, I start to panic a little bit and I have to wait 2 days before I read them. Cause the first time I got my paper, I cried from that. And that's just, I just have PTSD from getting comments back. Cause some people are just not good people when they give comments. They're like those, cause they're like, they're anonymous reviewers and you don't know who they are. So they feel like they can say whatever they want to say to you. And they don't care if they hurt your feelings. So,
that is true.
And I am a Cancer. I am very sensitive. I will cry at a drop of a hat. But also if I'm mean, if you make me mad, I will be really mad. So I am a very complicated individual, and I usually do get a little bit of anxiety before things, usually like right before. So like I'll be fine if I have like, when I did my quals, my prelims, I was fine until the day of and I woke up and I was like, oh crap, my prelims are today. Okay, I'm ready. So stuff like that. And then afterwards I'd be fine.
I was straight until 5 minutes before and then I was like, oh man.
Yeah. All right, so the next one is, do you feel that Black people still have a long way to go in academia, or should we just be proud of our accomplishments as of now?
I don't feel that Black people have a long way to go.
Not at all. We good.
Now, certain other demographics, you
got a long way to go.
Got a long way to go. And I'm proud of everything that my brown and Black people have done.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to science. Or, nope, you know what? I'm proud of everything my brown and Black people have done.
Throughout
history in regards to not just science, but education, literature, the arts. I want to even say certain types of languages.
Mm-hmm.
There have been people that have gone.
Even trades.
Trades, way above and beyond. Anything that they have deemed possible for us to do, we like, all right, now what? Like, that's just been our energy from the beginning.
Yeah, and I don't think that these two things are mutually exclusive. I don't think that being proud of something means you're saying that you're done and you don't have to do anything to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can be proud, like we said with Maya's manuscript. She's proud that she submitted that paper. It's still got a long way to go because it's still got to go through the review process. She still has to make revisions. She still got to get accepted. But she can still be damn proud of the research she did so far.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm 30 years old. I'm proud of where I am, but I still got 50, 60 more years to live my life. So just because you're proud of your achievement doesn't mean we still have a long way to go. Speaking of those other demographics, they need to accept us as we are.
Yep.
They need to realize that we are not like them, that we are, we do things differently, and they want diversity because they want diversity of thought. And usually your outward appearance of diversity is usually indicative of your thought processes, because based on our outward, whether we're male or female or non-binary, whether we're Black, white, Hispanic, indigenous. Mm-hmm. That is indicative of how we were raised and what we do, because I know some of the stuff that I do in my research, other people haven't thought of that because they don't have the same background as me. So I think differently because I grew up knowing, you know, you have to hustle. Where my dad, yeah, he worked a 9-to-5, but he also had his own business.
Yep.
Where you do everything you need to do to get the money, which is why, yeah, even though I have a fellowship, I'm still looking for more money and figuring out how I can do this, because once I have more money, I could do more research, stuff like that. Because last year, my advisor was like, he was like, oh, it must be a good thing that you have to turn down money. And I'm like, that's not a good thing. That's I'm mad. Thing. I was like, but because they wouldn't allow me to have more than one fellowship, and I'm just sitting up here like, I gotta turn down money? I've never heard of this.
Mm-hmm. And coming from someone who's had no money during half this PhD program, I going from not having money to having money to do research, I don't take nothing for granted. I'm like, look, how much you need for this? And all right, well, this is my alternative. We're going to save some money right here, here, and here, and still do quality research.
I feel you, because that was me my first 2 years. I didn't have, the project I chose didn't actually have money.
And then
I got money for it. But I got other people, you know, they come in a program with money, and they ain't never have to worry about not having any money. So they never have to, like, look for money. But for me, because I didn't have any money my first 2 years, I'm, like, constantly on the ground, like, I need money, even though I'm on the way out. I'm like, where am I going to get this money at? Oh, shit, I'm leaving, right?
I felt that. I have experience coming into a program conditionally because they found a flaw in something I did. I think they said my GPA, which was, like, a 3.6 or something.
How is that a flaw?
They said it wasn't high enough. I remember, like,
this was Dolores Umbridge, right?
Yeah.
How is a 3.6? That is mostly A's. No, and some B's.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I kind of had to just ignore her at that
That's
point.
That's not mostly B's and a few but A's. That's
I have to remember,
A's and some B's.
I was the only Black person to come in.
The standards, double standards. Mm-hmm,
the standards they had on me at the time were very different. And then on top of that, she was so, it was almost like she was gleeful about the possibility of taking money from me that it was just like, it was like you could see it in her eyes. Like she was so excited at the fact that I was probably not going to have money.
See, this is why they need a long, they got a long way to go.
Yeah, this is why. Hey, look, black men, y'all are suffering too. And I'd love to hear some of y'all stories. So please feel free to like tweet us, because we want to hear from the gaze of a Black man. But I want to say right now that I feel like white men and white women, y'all got a long way to go. As far as, not all of you, but y'all got a long way to go as far as diversity and inclusion in your universities.
Yeah, because I'm just tripping over 3.6.
Yeah, it was a 3.6.
I bet you there's people in here that got 3.2s, and they got, like, the minimum to get into the program is like a 3.0.
I remember one girl had a 3.2, and her saving grace is because she took a gap year and did some type of research in some foreign country.
Because they got the privilege to do a research in a foreign country.
Right, and that for some reason made her look sexy on the application.
Right. So our last question is, how do we plan to give back to our communities? Well, I for one will never forget where I came from, but I won't let people put upon me where they think I came from. Because some people, they assume because I'm Black, I had to have, like, grown up in the 1960s crack-stricken area where there was, like, where my mama had 10 kids.
You were a sharecropper.
Yeah.
At the age of two.
Yeah. So that ain't where I'm from. But, like, I won't forget where I came from, and I don't judge people based on their previous experiences. And I will always tell people that they have a way. You can always find a way out if you're willing to do that. Mm-hmm. And if as long as you're willing, I will help you to the best of my ability.
Of course.
And I do, so I love research, but I do a lot of outreach. And when I talk about outreach, I don't talk about just scientific outreach. I try to be a part of my community. So even where I'm at right now, I don't just stay in the university. I am a part of a volunteer organization where we go to the Boys and Girls Clubs and we volunteer at the homeless shelter and things like that. And we do those things. So that is a way that I give back, because there's this talk about people like, oh, the ivory tower. So, like, people and professors, they're not in, people that are in academia, they're not in tune with real working people. And a lot of them, that is true because they live in their own little bubble of academia. Their schools go, their kids go to the university school, and they really don't know what's going on in their community. And I refuse to do that because I don't believe that we can get anyone to care about our research unless if people are worried about how they are going to feed themselves that night or if they're going to have a roof over their head, how can I get them to care about, you know, ticks and Lyme disease? Because especially as Black people, people are like, oh, I don't have to worry about getting Lyme disease. I ain't going out to no woods to get bitten by no tick. But there, but I mean, we do want them to go out. I remember when I took my nephews out camping 2 years ago, and my 3-year-old nephew, we walked into the woods. He was like, "It smells like vegetables." I was cracking up laughing. So but cute. They, yeah, it was so cute. And I was just sitting up here like, I was like, "What do you mean it smells like vegetables?" I was like, "Oh," and he's like, "Nature smells like vegetables." I'm like, "You be sniffing vegetables?"
Hey, look, I'm happy you like leafy greens.
But right. But they have fun, and they can't wait till I take them. Like they always can't wait till I can take them camping.
I'm going to keep mine pretty short. I just want to invest in the Black dollar. I see everything we do as a tool to not only fill our pockets, but to give back to our community, to make sure that we do, if we don't have those centers for, like, outreach, that we invest in those. If we want to create community gardens, we don't have to ask anybody. We just do it, you know?
Right.
Like, I want to make sure that as far as giving back to our community, it doesn't be forced. You know, it's something that we can't force ourselves
to do. And
it's
something we doing now. It's something we do. White people coming and doing, trying to do white savior syndrome and stuff.
Nah, it's just you making your money, and what you choose to do with your money is that you want to help the younger generation. You want to teach them about agriculture. You want to teach them about the environment. You want to necessarily teach them about how to save money. I want to do all of those things. On top of that, I want to invest in certain businesses. I want to be able to start apartments in impoverished areas where the rent would be lower.
And there's still safety. And
there's still safety and everything and so on and so forth. So, like, outside of science, I too would like to give back to my community in every way I can.
Right.
So, yeah.
So, that's it for today.
Yeah. I mean, we kept it pretty short. We kept it pretty cute. We kept it pretty classy. There's only one more thing I want to say. Maya's tangent corner. I do not want Black people to ever feel uncomfortable in whatever you're doing. And I don't want you to always feel like you have to be in a certain type of mold. I want you to be unapologetically you. I don't care if you want to dye your hair pink, get a nose ring, or whatever. But I want you to be yourself, and I want you to show the world what you do. I feel like parents who are listening to this episode... with your kids, I want you guys to invest more time in your kids. I really do. Like, there's a huge disconnect right now with our kids, and all they seem to care about is entertainment, Fortnite. Music, video games. God, I hate Fortnite. I hate Fortnite so bad right now. Take those kids to museums. Like, take them out to art galleries. Let them experience things that they probably have never experienced before. I can tell you how many times as a kid, I can't even count on my fingers how many times as a kid I went to, like, the Children's Science Museum of Atlanta or the Puppetry of Arts Museum in Atlanta or any, like, I was always at some museum. And we lived in Fernbank, like, my elementary school. Fernbank was, like, an environmental paleontologist type of program they had.
Yeah.
And, I mean... we live there.
And even if you can only, like, they go to school, like, even if they only go to these museums because they go through their school, make sure, volunteer. Like, that was one thing. Like, even though my mom didn't take us to places outside of it, anytime I had a field trip, my mom was always the volunteer.
Yeah.
It worked out with her because she worked night shift, so she would just stay up You know, should just drink some coffee and stay up and go to the museum anytime me and my brothers or sisters have that. I mean, you do. I know that some people have the financial and the social constraints, but sometimes you do get some notice.
Yeah.
Where you can, like, request off or, you know, take a sick day. We take sick days for other stuff. But just to show your kids that you kind of care.
Yeah. I mean, just on a weekend where you were free and instead of just sitting in the house.
Yeah, it can be on a weekend.
Most museums and stuff are free.
Or they have free days once a month.
There you go. Like Chicago or whatever they do.
Yeah, they do it on like the Tuesdays or Sundays or something.
Right.
Just like the third Sunday of the month or something.
I know it's hard, but I really want just invest in your kids and don't just have them in front of a TV.
So they can have these memories from when they grow older. Because I definitely remember like it was funny because some students would be like, oh, aren't you embarrassed that your mom is our chaperone?
Nope.
I'd be like, I love that my mom is my chaperone because if I want to buy something, she got the money.
Mm-hmm.
I like, so instead of her
snacks.
Just right,
yeah,
her
sit here with these fruit roll-ups.
Like, it's not just my mom just sent me with $10 because if she just sent me by myself, it would just be $10. But if she got the whole wallet with her.
Okay. Y'all get them sack lunches.
And
okay?
I was always with, yeah, and I was always in her group and whoever people. I know I took, when I had my nephew, I was his chaperone when we went to the zoo. And we had the other two kids we had a blast.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was like excited to be there and like let's do this. I was sitting up there, the kids like, hold on a minute, let's just, and I'm like, no, y'all gonna see this entire zoo. We gonna see everything.
Now that's my recommendation for kids. Now adults, that goes back into the, and I'll put this more in perspective of the science and STEMs people.
Mm-hmm.
Be you.
Yeah.
Be you. Like, do not try to conform or change yourself to identify with those around you. All the time we hear, oh, we like you because you're so unique. You're so different. You're so this and that and that and this.
Until you go up against them.
Until you go up against them, then they don't want you to be who you are.
And you're doing a disservice to everyone else because if you're not acting yourself and you're acting like them, they're going to think all the other black people are supposed to act like them. Mm-hmm. And then they're going to think it's something wrong with us that haven't that's not acting like them.
I love seeing women with their natural hair. I love seeing men with their hair grown out. I love seeing men when their hair dyed blonde. Like,
no,
I just love
these colonizers. I need y'all to stop commenting on our hair.
Please stop it.
Stop.
Please stop it. But I want you to be yourself in these departmental meetings and when you're giving presentations. I don't want you to have to, none of that code switching. I know we got a long way to go before we officially get rid of that.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of hope that it's soon. But I just want people to be themselves, their authentic selves in the workplace. That's all I want.
So now that we are about to, we're finished with our podcast, and we just want to leave y'all with a little taste of James Brown.
Your bad self.
Now,
I'm black and I'm proud. She is a winner.
Bye, y'all.